weather cuts across every socioeconomic line, every demographic. Everybody is affected by the weather. And so I just think, you know, when you've got a topic that everybody's interested in, what a great gig.
It's How to Be Amazing. I'm Michael Ian Black. Here is an interesting statistic for you listeners. If you are American, studies have proven that if I say to you the word weatherman, there is an 83% chance you will think of my guest today. Albert Lincoln Roker Jr. is a New York native, specifically Queens, and a New York institution. He has spent most of his broadcasting career in New York City, and for the last 20 years or so, Al has been one of those famous, familiar faces to millions of viewers on The Today Show. But he is also an accomplished producer, best-selling author, entrepreneur, and I am very excited to speak with him today about what continues to get him out of bed before dawn every morning, and I am pleased to welcome Al Roker to How to Be Amazing.
Michael, good to see you, sir.
Nice to see you. Why the weather, of all things? How did that happen?
Completely by accident. I had no intentions of being on TV. I wanted to be a writer or a producer. I did not want to be on camera. I went to school in SUNY Oswego, which is on upstate New York.
One of the great SUNY schools?
Yes, it is. In fact, I took a television on-camera performance class. And a true story, my department chairman told me, Roker, you've got the perfect face for radio. Don't plan on being on camera.
Very
flattering. And one of my classmates was a guy who was equally ill-prepared to be on camera, a guy named Jerry Seinfeld. Hmm. So, but he only stayed for 2 years. He might have actually done something with himself if he had stayed the whole four.
We'll look into it.
Yeah, we'll check him out. But I really didn't. But at the end of my sophomore year, the same chairman, the department chairman, put me up for a weekend weather job. I had taken a class in meteorology just for a science requirement. I didn't plan on using it.
You got through the class, but there was no like, this is
no,
my life.
None whatsoever.
Interesting.
None whatsoever.
So when you're a sophomore in college, having taken one meteorology class in your life
right.
and having no great love for the weather,
right.
how do you prepare each day to give the weather?
Well, you know, then it was a job and it was, okay, this is what I'm being paid to do. And so, I mean, look, my dad was a graphic artist by trade, but at the time when he was a very young man, it was very difficult for a black man to get a job in the commercial artist union. So he drove a bus. He did what he needed to do to put food on the table. And this was, to me, it was just going to be a job. It was going to be a stepping stone to writing or producing or, you know, dare I say, directing.
So when you're preparing the forecast, though, this is back in the prehistoric days. Are you just getting a ticker tape?
We had a wire. We had satellite images that came in that were, this was, you got to remember, 1974, black and white satellite images that by the time we got them, this film loop from the National Weather Service, they were already about 12 hours old.
Mm-hmm.
So these were the, I mean, good old days. And this was before computer graphics. You either drew on the map with a marker that you could wipe off, or you had magnetic symbols that you put up on the map.
Well, that's a lot of fun. That's maybe more fun.
I actually missed those days.
You do.
You know, that you could, there was something, and I think we are all getting back to a more analog time. You know,
is there any chance Al Roker will be doing magnetic funsies on the weather?
I have tried to convince them to do it. We have
like
not,
a retro day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, go back to a bow tie and mm-hmm. You know, when you look at the old video of Dave Garraway, in fact, little
who was the first Today Show host,
he was the first
correct?
Today Show host,
and he had a monkey, right?
Yeah, he had J. Fred Muggs, who joined him a little later in the program, a little later on in the genesis of the program. But a fun fact, weather-wise and Today Show history-wise, Dave Garraway had a big chalkboard that was in the shape of the U.S., and he would call the U.S. Weather Bureau in Washington, D.C., and they would talk him through drawing what was on the map. And the young man who was the page on the first day of the Today Show that put the call through in Washington, D.C., was Willard Scott.
I'm getting chills.
That's
Willard
right.
Scott, who became your mentor.
Who is my mentor, who became the weatherman. He was truly America's weatherman.
Oh, yeah.
Because he went from state fair to state fair and did all this great stuff. And, I mean, he really was, before any of these guys did this, Willard was doing this. He first at WRC in Washington, and then when he got in 1980, when he moved to the Today Show, I mean, nobody had ever seen anybody like this guy.
And Willard Scott this morning is in Washington, D.C., Willard, you got something against us? It's been so long.
I know it, and I miss you. Well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I'm hoping you'll give me a big hug tomorrow, so I'll be back.
Will you be home?
I'll be home tomorrow with you.
Life is worth living.
Right, thank you. How do you like the... things are so hot down here in Washington, I put my top down. It's going to be 60 degrees and sunny, a beautiful day. Lovie Maddox in Fayette, Alabama is 101 years old, and we wish her a happy birthday.
What differentiated his style from what everybody else was doing?
He was who he was. And is who he is. He wasn't afraid to look silly. He wasn't afraid to poke fun at himself. He had this joy of life. I mean, he was this literally larger than life character. You know, he was about 6'2", 300 pounds. He was a big, big guy. And he had a big personality to match. And you know, he's retired now, but he is still literally my second dad.
So when you have a weatherman mentor, what is he teaching you? When he takes you under his wing, what is that?
One day over dinner, I remember him saying this to me. He goes, listen, my career has boiled down to two things. You never give up your day job, and you be yourself. And it's true. And it doesn't matter what you do. That really is the quintessential advice for anybody. You know, look, I do a lot of different things. But they're going to have to pry me out of the Today Show with dynamite, because that's the wellspring from which all this...
I'm not sure that you pry somebody with dynamite.
Maybe that was a wrong analogy.
Maybe a crowbar?
Yeah, you probably do.
Or you blow you out of your chair with
dynamite. Or you have a crowbar with dynamite.
You say one of the rules was be yourself.
Yes.
Did you have to learn how to be yourself?
Yeah,
on camera?
I did. I actually did, because I, you know, you have this preconceived notion of what you're supposed to be on camera and be this guy. And
wait, let me interrupt you real quick, because this speaks to, I guess, what I was asking for. What was the prototypical weatherman before Willard Scott?
Well, it basically fell in two categories. You were either like the scientist, or you were the weather, quote, weather girl, you know, and there wasn't a lot of room. There were a few prototypes who were like Willard around the country. Sonny Elliott in Detroit, Sam Houston Allred in Washington, D.C., Barry Zavan, the weatherman in Washington, D.C.
Barry Zavan.
That was
weathermen of the best names.
They really do. Look at Frank Field's kid, Storm Field.
Yeah, I know. Dallas Raines.
Dallas Raines in L.A., you know?
Unbelievable.
I mean, you can't make that up. There's a guy.
You can make that up, actually.
Okay,
I think some of them do.
Here's one. Okay, here's one for you. Guy in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina. Larry Sprinkle.
Unbelievable.
There you go.
All right, so there's
which could be something else.
But Al, I don't want to get you in trouble.
Wouldn't it be great if he was a urologist?
All right, so there was the Stentorian model, mm-hmm. and there was the Weather Girl model.
Yes.
And you had to figure out where you fit.
Right. And here's what I think I was trying to do early on. I was trying to be the wild and crazy guy.
Mm-hmm.
This was before Steve Martin did this. But I thought, what? On Groundhog's Day, I was wearing a groundhog suit and popped out of a manhole.
You bet you were.
And Willard, actually, that was kind of the genesis of the dinner. Well, so he says, listen, don't just be you. You know, if it's funny, it's funny, but you don't have to force it.
When you talk about the trap of playing a character, do you feel like there is currently an Al Roker character? Is there? I know that you are, and I think this is what people like about you, your authentic self on the Today Show.
Wait now, be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle, because salt.
Mm-hmm, because you don't want to bruise crab meat.
Yeah, well, I don't want it in like little smushed up pieces.
No.
Oh, 2 minutes, Al, you got to hurry. Mustard and lemon juice, there you go. Just
gently.
It like you would your wife that's, on a Saturday night.
Well, I wouldn't be gentle then, eh?
But I wonder if... the format is limiting in a certain sense in allowing you to be your full self.
The beauty of the format is that it does allow you to a full range. Like, for example, today, did a piece on Harry Belafonte. and his activism and his music.
People said, when did you become an activist? I said, the day I was born. The purpose of art is to show life not as it is, but to show life as it should be. And artists are compelled by the very nature of the gift to do a lot of things that inspire.
I don't know that there are a lot of places, a lot of platforms that would let you do a little of everything, you know, where you can have a good time with the weather, where you can, if you have a certain feeling about a topic, you can bring it up, or you can say, I'd like to interview this person. Harry Belafonte is part of the series we're doing, Living Legends, where, you know, I'm talking to people who are like 90 and older.
Well, you're talking to me and, right now.
Exactly.
Living legends.
You're a living legend. You're not 90, but you are, in fact, a living legend. It's amazing.
The format that you talk about, I was thinking about this in preparing for this interview because it's such a strange format.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's trying to do so many things simultaneously. And uniquely, I think, among programs, each of these shows tries to portray their on-air talent as something akin to a family, which I think is a very odd dynamic. Because there's no, I mean, like, if you think about shows that have multiple hosts, let's say the NFL Today or something.
Right.
I don't think of those guys as a family.
Yeah.
And yet there's so much invested in the Today Show, I think in particular, about portraying it as a family. And yet family dynamics are very complicated. And it seems like when there's ever tension in the Today Show world, that's immediately quashed. And it feels to me like there's something dishonest is too strong a word, but
look, here's what I would say.
Thanks for answering the question
okay.
That I didn't ask.
No, well, it's okay because I think there are a couple of things at play here. I think it's the time of day,
right,
that kind of fosters this family atmosphere. It's the morning, family gathers together to get the day started, and I do think that there are, in the best of circumstances, there is a chemistry and there is a family dynamic that sometimes, and by the way, there are times where it is on full display, where maybe Savannah says something needling Matt, or I say something zinging Carson, that's in good fun. But sometimes, you know, you can see that maybe somebody said something that somebody else doesn't agree with, but you kind of move along with it because that's the way it works. It's a very disparate group of people.
In a sense, they're looking for that harmony, but they're also kind of keeping their ears open for that tension.
Yeah, because nobody gets along 100% of the time. It's not normal. But I think on our program, we've been very fortunate that a number of us have worked together for so long. I've worked with Matt since the early 90s.
Yeah.
We literally get to the point where we can finish each other's sentences. I think what's great about our program is that if somebody has a problem, we don't air it, obviously, on TV, but after the program, we'll go and say, hey, look, here's the deal. And you talk it out, and you move on. I think we're very unique in that. In that aspect. And I think that's why, you know, I think people like watching. We got 4 hours of the Today Show now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of TV. You know, the show morphs as the day part changes. And I think that's the secret to the success.
How involved are you in the, you said you can pitch a story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have enough muscle at the Today Show to be like, I want to talk to Harry Belafonte? And they're like, yeah, great. Go talk to Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, I don't know that I would phrase it as muscle, but I think they want to.
I'm going
to
frame it as muscle.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I know a guy. You know, he's a guy.
He's a guy.
The folks, the powers that be, are smart enough to realize that if it's something we're passionate about, that translates.
Before I move on to other weighty topics, I'm going to ask you a question that I feel like I know the answer to, but I'm guessing most of our listeners would ask you if they could, which is, what time does everybody get up in the morning to get there?
It's easier for Matt and I because there's much less to do, i.e. hair.
Right.
But I get up, and I think Matt gets up around the same time, about 4 o'clock, 4 a.m., and he gets in a little earlier because he's, you know, he's got a lot of homework to do and he's got a lot of prep and things change overnight. Savannah, usually I get in about 5:30. I work out with a trainer a couple of days, like 3 days before. I see my trainer about
4:15. We get it. You're ripped. We get it.
People have TV. They know I'm not ripped.
What the listeners don't know is that Al came in shirtless. He's ripped.
And now I'm pantless. It's unbelievable.
Well, that I wasn't going to share.
Yeah, well.
That was supposed to be our secret.
It's between us, literally. But everybody gets in. Like Savannah's in the chair at 5:30 or a little earlier.
Yeah.
Matt, you know, and our hair and makeup. Matt gets in there about 6. I get in the chair about 6:20, 6:25.
You said your dad was a graphic artist who felt like he couldn't get work in the commercial art industry because of his race. Did he pursue that line, or was it just kind of understood that he didn't have a shot?
No, he pursued it, and he was a pretty good artist, but he couldn't make a go of it. He couldn't crack the union to make a decent living. So had to do something, and he got a job. He got hired on in the New York City Transit Authority, and by the time he retired, he was in labor relations. He was actually in management in the Transit Authority and in the MTA. But he had a great work ethic, and he just had this joy of living. You know, he was a really affectionate man. I get a lot, long before men hugged and kissed, or at least where it seemed fashionable. That was my dad. You know, he was a big hugger and a kisser, you know, of everybody. I didn't realize that it wasn't necessarily the norm until I'd go to, like, family functions and, you know, I'd go in to hug and kiss an uncle and go, whoa, 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 whoa. And, you know, kind of stick the hand out, you know. Hey, nephew, how are you? Hey, oh, they're good to see you.
It's funny.
That was close.
My son's 15 and I kiss him every day. We go out to the end of the driveway. I get the newspaper. He waits for the bus and I give him a kiss on the forehead every day. And I stopped doing it for a little while because I felt like it was making him uncomfortable. And then I got the most distinct sense from him one day that he missed it. And I started doing it again.
Yeah.
And I've continued to do it. I think it's important.
Yeah, I do too. Although my boy's 14. And I was talking to him. And I remember saying, hey, sweetheart. And he goes, don't call me that. Don't call me that. I said, what? Call you what? He goes, sweetheart. That's for girls. I said, oh,
I'm actually with him on that.
Okay.
I'm actually with him on this.
You know
what?
Because
thing.
he was such a beautiful boy, you know, a baby.
Yeah.
And then finally Deborah said, he's right. Yeah. My wife said, I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
Did your dad live long enough to see your success?
Yes. I mean, I'm the only one of their children that went into this side of the business, but they're equally proud of all of their kids. When I got that job in Syracuse, I remember calling home and my mom answering, Mom, I just got a job on TV. She's, oh, really? What channel? I said, well, you can't see it here, there in New York City. I'm in Syracuse. Oh, what channel? I said, Channel 5. Oh, then I can't see you. We have Channel 5 here. I said, no, Mom. See, that's Channel 5 in Syracuse. Well, we have Channel 5 in New York. I said, I know, but it doesn't reach to New York City. Oh, of course it does.
We get it. I'm
looking at it. Here, I'm going to turn the TV on now. What time are you on?
Are you on TV right now?
No, Mom, it's not. It was like a bad Abbott and Costello routine. You know, when I got the job at WNBC doing weekend weather, I thought, I've made it.
Time for weather, Mr. Al Roker.
Things looking pretty good after a nice St. Patrick's Day outside right now. Well, it's the Empire State Building as you take a look. Weather video, Mike Heron and Jason Morgese. You'll see our high for the day, 52 degrees, the overnight low 39. Temperature currently is at 45 with the winds coming out of the west-southwest, 8 miles per hour, relative humidity 58%, and the barometer now rising, 30.24.
People have said the Today Show must be your dream job, and it wasn't because it never even dawned on me.
Did you and your dad ever talk about the difference in opportunities between what he experienced and what you experienced?
No, I wouldn't say we specifically talked about it, but I always remember him saying, I want more for you than I had.
And this was a guy who had risen through the ranks.
Yeah, he had risen through the ranks. For example, now he knows how much, I mean, I also love, I love comics. I love graphic arts. I wanted to be an animator. I mean, that was my dream job. I wanted to work for Walt Disney. And so I wanted to go to the New York School of Graphic Art and Design because that's where just about every golden age comic book artist and animator went to on this coast. And I got a scholarship to Xavier High School here in Manhattan, a Jesuit military school. And my parents would have none of it, the idea of me going to High School of Art and Design. You have a chance to go to a premier private school here in New York City, you're going. Because you're going to make something of yourself.
Even though he himself had wanted to be an artist,
right.
Knew you wanted to be an artist.
Yeah, but also saw, the struggles that he went through, and he wanted to make sure his kid had the best education possible. And so...
How did you feel about that at the time?
At the time, I was angry. I was like, why? And by the way, things have turned out okay. You know?
Yeah.
But then years later, my daughter, who's a senior now, she was at a private school in Manhattan, went from kindergarten through middle school. And when it came time for high school, decided she wanted to go to LaGuardia Performing Arts. And her mom was dead set against it. And I said, you know what? If that's what you want to do, great. Because I didn't want her to have in the back of her mind, what if?
Right.
And she's a senior this year and realized she doesn't really, I mean, she's a good actress and a good director. But has realized that's not what she wants to do and is really happy she went where she went and has the friends that she has, but that she knows going into college, she's not going to waste those college years pursuing acting or theater because that's not really what she wants to do.
Right. So she had the opportunity to try it out at a younger age, and now she can focus on some other passion that she finds.
Yeah.
This question just popped into my mind, and I think a lot of people at your level maybe I don't know if they struggle with it or not, but are you at peace with your level of success in terms of like having so much more, so many more financial advantages, for example, than your parents did? Mm-hmm. Did that ever enter your consciousness? Did you have to make a peace with that?
No, I don't think so, because I think that's the natural progression that every parent wants their child. I think it's a natural progression to do better than they did. To have every opportunity to do better than they did. Interesting that you mentioned that because my wife and I have talked about that because she comes from a large family and she says sometimes she feels guilty about having achieved a level of success that that maybe other family members haven't and by the way are doing quite well, thank you, but a different level. And I said, no, I don't. I mean, because everybody achieves whatever they achieve for whatever reason. I mean, sometimes it's skill. Sometimes it's just dumb luck in being at the right place at the right time. But as far as our parents, I think that's you want your kids to do better, and which I think is a problem in a sense for a lot of kids today in that their parents have achieved a level of success that how are they going to equal that? Well, there are obviously different levels of success and different definitions of success. But a lot of these kids are, I think, in a sense, giving up and like moving back home because they feel like, well, I just want to kind of keep my level of life and living. And I can do that by living at home with mom and dad.
Do you see a difference in opportunities for young people now versus when you were coming up?
I think there are more opportunities for kids today, I mean, especially if you're in this end of it, the media, podcasting and internet and digital and, Snapchat and all that. Can they make the same kind of money? I don't know. I mean, because it's so fractured. Look, when I was coming up, you either worked at a radio station or a television station, and that was pretty much it. And you knew you worked in a very small city, a small town, and then you moved to a bigger city and a bigger city and a big. Now it's, these YouTube sensations, who have, 12 million followers. And it's kind of mind boggling. And is it really true success? And how lasting is that? are these people, these YouTube stars, you know, I mean, they seem somewhat disposable, you know, I mean, they're hot for a couple of weeks or a month or a year, and then where did they go? I would hate to be starting off now, because I think there are many different avenues, but boy, is it, you've really got to know how to do a lot of different things. Yeah.
Yeah. The barrier to entry has been lowered to the point where anybody can be on screen,
right,
if that's what you want.
Yes.
But I agree with you that the ability to craft a long-term career, in a sense, has gotten harder. Maybe it just requires different skills.
Well, like, for example, people are always like, who's, you know, the next Oprah or any, there's never going to be another Oprah, because that period of time has moved on. The idea that, you know, there in a given city, you had three, maybe four or five TV stations, and there were a handful of cable channels, and that was it. Well, now it's so infinitely multiplied. That's why when people, there's for example, just in television, quality television, there's too much TV.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrific. There's great, there's so many opportunities, but who has the time to watch everything or half of it? You know?
My daughter does.
Okay, well, there you go.
And she seems to find
And if she can figure out a way to make a living at that, that's fantastic.
So, yes, I think you're right. I mean, the landscape has become so fractured, and yet something like the Today Show endures, isn't going anywhere. You mentioned earlier that you didn't, in the case of success, you mm-hmm. know, it's some combination of luck and skill. What do you think are your greatest skills in terms of how you approach your job and how you've managed to, I guess, keep it or stay relevant?
I love what I do. I mean, yes, I can be tired and things like that, but I love this job. And so I have a passion for it. And I really do enjoy weather. I find it fascinating.
So you fell in love with weather at some point.
I did. I mean, very early on, because I just found that it was the great thing about weather is that, unlike news or politics, or weather cuts across every socioeconomic line, every demographic. Everybody is affected by the weather. And so I just think, you know, when you've got a topic that everybody's interested in, what a great gig. I'll never forget, I got in a cab. This was early on in my career here in New York City. And guy looks in the rearview mirror. Oh, Al Roker, how you doing? Good. And we're driving for a while. He said, I hope you don't take this the wrong way. I said, but when I watch you, you don't look like somebody who's on TV. You look like somebody I know. I'm not a particularly good-looking guy. I'm average.
Stop fishing.
I want you to go ahead and say
you're a gorgeous man, Al Roker.
Thank you. Thank you. But look, I'm bald. I wear glasses. I mean, you know, not a particularly great physique. I mean, it. I think people relate, you know, and I'm not afraid to be a bit of a goofball. I think I'm somebody you could know.
Before the break, Al Roker told me, I love this job, and it's something that comes across to the millions who have been awake with him every morning for over 20 years. But Al Roker is a lot more than a likable guy, although he's definitely that. Despite having achieved a level of success that exceeded his dreams being on air at the Today Show, he continues to push himself, writing several bestsellers, as well as starting his own production company, where he's personally involved in every project they greenlight. Coming up, we talk more about the Today Show, including addressing some of his famous quote-unquote outbursts, and he tells me that it is perfectly acceptable to get drunk on air. Well, okay, I embellish that a little bit there to justify my own life decisions. The one thing that has struck me about you over the years, and I grew up in the area, and I feel like I've grown up with you in a sense, is I feel like I remember the transition of you going from weekends to nights or days to the Today Show. And then remarkably, I mean, I remember this, that you went from being the weatherman on the Today Show to really being a part of the journalistic family in the larger sense of the word. Did that was that transition a kind of natural progression that would have happened, or was there an ambition that you found in yourself to make that transition happen?
It wasn't really a transition, because every place I worked when I started in local television, you know, I did weekend weather, but we also had to, you also had to be a reporter. You had to, because these were smaller stations and they couldn't afford to, they needed all the bodies they could out on the street.
What you're telling me is you have no meteorological training and no journalistic training.
Exactly.
This does not speak well for America's press, Al.
I know. Isn't this great? is this a great country or what?
The best.
It's fantastic. The first week I was in Washington, D.C., or maybe it was the second week, there was this, I don't know if you're probably too young to remember, but there was this Hanafi Muslim takeover of this embassy, and it was just major front page news. And most of the people were out of the newsroom, and the news director came out and said Marion Barry was a councilman at the time and was shot and was headed to the hospital. And the news director came out and said, "Roker, you're going to the hospital." I said, "I'm fine." Said, no, you're going to the hospital to cover Marion Barry. Get out there. I'm like, okay.
Right, a huge story.
Yeah, and I kind of learned as I went. And every place I've worked, like when I got here to New York, I worked 2 days a week doing weekend weather, but 3 days a week as a general assignment reporter and feature reporter at WNBC. In fact, when I got the Monday through Friday job at WNBC, there were people who were wondering, why is he doing weather? He's a reporter. Mm. You know, they hadn't even seen me doing the weather.
But I feel like Willard Scott was always the weatherman in a way that you were not.
Well, and part of it is, I think I was very fortunate that I had managers who allowed me to do other stuff. And plus, I expressed an interest in it. You know, if you need it, hey, could we do this? Or could I do that? Okay. And I find a lot of times if you just ask, people are like, oh, you want to do that? Sure. Okay, sure.
Do you consider yourself ambitious?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I am. And I've got a good ego. You know, my daughter, one day we were watching something online that I had done, and she said, "Dad, you really like watching yourself, don't you?" I said, "Yes, I do. Yes, I do."
What are you looking for when you're watching yourself?
I don't think I'm looking for anything. I just like to watch
your own dumb
face. Watch me. I like to watch the people around me. It's you know, because you don't get you don't get to watch you when you're doing it. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm always kind of, on the one hand, jealous of what you guys do, because you act and your performance is captured, and there's a record of it. I mean, yeah, in a sense, there's a record of what we do. Yeah, but it there's just so much of it. It just spills out into your homes, and nobody. It's fairly disposable. Whereas what you guys do, as an actor, you know, it's preserved in a sense. It's sometimes kind of fun just to watch it.
And was that instinct for preservation, was that the impetus behind the creation of your production company?
When I was a kid, I would make animated movies, like little stop action, like I'd take a Gumby or a Pokey and make little cartoons. I liked...
You know that's copyright infringement, right?
It is. Okay. And Art Clokey came after me for that. Nobody knows who Art Clokey is.
Creator of Gumby.
But yeah, I don't even know why I know that. But I've always liked creating stuff. And by the way, most of the shows we produce, I'm not even in. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in being in. But I do like the process of, okay, here's an idea, and then a year later, here it is on TV.
What have been some of your shows that we may not know are Al Roker shows?
Coast Guard Alaska.
What network is that?
That was on the Weather Channel. Uh-huh. We did a couple of documentaries for History, including a look at the History Channel called Honor Deferred, about the African Americans who were denied medals of honor and were finally given them posthumously in World War II. We produced a series of holiday specials for HGTV. Celebrity Holiday Homes. So we just, a whole different DEA on Spike, a bunch of different shows.
So when it's an Al Roker production, is it you going to the networks and personally pitching?
Yes, yeah, and my team.
Right.
Okay, here's an idea. I'll never forget, I was in Los Angeles, this is years and years and years ago, for a meeting. opened the door, and there sitting there with his team waiting to pitch was Dick Clark.
Hmm.
Now, at the Dick, there's nobody bigger than Dick Clark.
Right.
He still was out, still pitching.
Yeah.
And intimately involved in every production that his company produced. So I always remember being struck by that and saying that's what it takes. And it doesn't matter how successful you are.
Has the hustle changed for you?
Only what you're hustling, in a sense. And now there's digital. Like, we're doing a lot of live streaming kind of thing, you know, on Facebook Live and Periscope and YouNow, and trying to generate the next group of stars, not necessarily YouTube stars, but people who will be personalities that can go from these smaller platforms to a mainstream media. But I think,
you're trying to get some of that disposable fruit.
Yeah, you bet, baby. but here's what I do find interesting. Our idea of what television is has to change. I think to me, it's a screen. And you alluded to that earlier. I'm so old. I remember my parents' television was
the size of this room.
It was an RCA Victor. It was a piece of substantial furniture.
Yeah.
It was Danish modern, blonde wood.
Oh, your parents had good taste.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I wish I could show you a picture of my mom and dad. They were such a beautiful couple. I look back at them now and I go, oh my God, they were so
elegant. You'd look back
elegant.
And you go, what happened?
Listen, growing up, people would come and they go, they would look at me incredulously. Like, your parents are beautiful. And the corollary, the unspoken
right.
second part of that was, you are a freak. What the hell happened? Are you adopted?
Oh, that's funny.
So sad. And ironically, there are six kids. Three of us were adopted. Three of us are biological. The adopted kids are gorgeous. the biological kids, not so much.
Well, sure, because you can pick those.
Yeah, but
we'll take the gorgeous ones.
But a baby, you don't know what a baby's going to turn out like. And, but the spawn of my two gorgeous parents, this is it. God, it's so depressing.
Well, what was the impetus? Why did they adopt three kids? They had three.
Well, they didn't at the time.
Oh, I see.
My mother had difficulties conceiving, and she had a number of miscarriages. She lost a couple of children, but she came from a large family and she wanted a lot of kids. So, there was me, then they adopted a couple, and then there was a sister, and then my baby brother, who is 17 years younger than me, was the last down the chute.
So that's six kids on a bus driver's salary.
Yeah, yeah. And my mother did some part-time nursing assistant stuff, but for the most part, she was home.
You know, now, in 2016, we think that just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
But then it probably was, right? I mean, he was a union driver.
Yeah.
Probably making a decent wage.
I mean, look, we always had food on the table. And, you know, I mean, there were times where things were tighter. Or he worked a lot of overtime. We wouldn't see him for a couple. Look, the house we owned I still own the house I grew up in. But they were able to buy the house off of the blizzard of the overtime he made in the blizzard of 1964.
Wow.
It would hurt your career, though, if you weighed in, because you want everyone to love you, right?
No, philosophy. It's one of those things that, you know, it's not in my purview. It's not part of my expertise.
But if I knew you privately and we were hanging out, you would unload and let me hear everything.
I would talk about it, yeah.
But you might say, hey, Obama screwed up here. Obama did a great job.
Yeah, but that's not, you know, people aren't tuning in to the Today Show to hear Al.
And the weatherman, that's particularly a neutral situation, right, where you have to be everybody's friend.
Well, no, yeah, not everybody.
Hitler, you could have come out of it.
I was listening to an interview. It sounded like an impromptu interview you did with Howard Stern a couple of years ago when you were promoting an app. This is the entrepreneur aspect of Al Roker, in addition to everything else. And you were adamant about your neutrality as a television personality, which I guess I understand, but I wonder if you ever find that frustrating when there's a moment in the news that you feel like, I wish I could speak my mind about this, mm-hmm. but I just can't.
Well, you know, we had that during the Olympics and the whole Ryan Lochte thing happened. And I kind of was very vocal about, you know,
Billy Bush, you basically said he's lying. He's just lying. Clearly lying.
He lied. He lied to you.
Yeah.
He lied to Matt Lauer, lied to his mom. He left his teammates hanging while he skedaddled.
He certainly lied about some details.
No, he lied. No, Billy.
Some details?
Billy.
There was no robbery.
There was no robbery. There was no pullover. There was nothing. Nobody cocked a gun to his head.
Hold on.
He lied.
Okay, calm down. Listen, if a security guard is standing in front of you with a badge and is asking for money and you don't speak Portuguese.
There was a translator.
Right.
Well,
would you have had that interaction with Matt?
Yeah, I think so. Well, here's the interesting. I don't know that if it was the 9 o'clock hour, I think I might have. Had it been the traditional Today Show, the 7 to 9 o'clock, where we don't really do that, probably not. But at 9 o'clock, two things. We kind of banter a little more. And that particular day, we had had Caprianus, so the lovely drink of Brazil, mm-hmm. Before the program. Mm-hmm. So...
you were in your cups.
I was a little looped.
Did you get pushback from the network about
I did
that?
Not. Even though there was something in Page Six that was, it was literally made up of whole cloth that, executives are upset with Al Roker. Not one person spoke to me. And nobody was upset. And thankfully, the viewers were in our corner. And so, but if I think if you made a habit of it, I think it then becomes a little tedious,
right?
And you sound like Keith Olbermann. Just kidding, I like Keith Olbermann.
We all love Keith.
Everybody loves Keith.
The Lochte thing, though, a big story, essentially inconsequential.
Yes,
but then there's things like I don't know the election.
You've right.
got two candidates.
Yes,
or the Black Lives Matter movement
right.
versus the police.
Yes,
and those two examples mm-hmm. Must raise. I know in me raised pretty strong emotions.
Of course.
Is there ever a moment when you're dealing with these larger issues where you just are like, you know what? I just have to get this off my chest.
You want to, but again, the nature of the beast, you know, I mean, there are places for that.
But are there places for you to do that?
Not on our broadcast.
Right.
Because we are a news broadcast. One might make the argument that, they do it on Fox News and that's them, and they can do what they want. But I think by our standards, we can't do
that. If you wanted to write an op-ed in the New York Times...
I don't think I can. I'd like to believe that any right-thinking person has a good idea of where you would stand on something. Now, it may be naive on my part, but...
Well, to your credit, I have no idea where you stand politically.
And I think that's... That's the probably the right thing. Look, from a factual standpoint, for example, when here's Lester Holt, who's going to be moderating this first debate, and a lot of pressure, and you'll have Donald Trump saying, Lester's a Democrat, and the fact is he's not a Democrat. He's either independent or Republican, but he's not a Democrat. Mm. And the idea is that guess what. It shouldn't matter, A, but B, I can say that. I can say, hey, by the way, Donald Trump was wrong because it's a fact. It's not an opinion.
A large part of the national conversation, particularly during this election, has to do with false equivalency and bias, but in kind of the reverse of what we've heard in previous elections. In particular, there's a kind of bias, some argue, towards Donald Trump in that he's such good television that he gets so much more coverage.
Right.
I don't want you to speak for him, and maybe you can't answer this
sure.
at all, but Matt Lauer got tremendous pushback after the Commander-in-Chief forum because of his perceived going easy on Trump versus his perceived going hard on Hillary.
The worst reviews last night were for the multimillionaire morning show host asking the question, specifically, that Matt Lauer treated Hillary Clinton as one would expect a journalist to question a candidate. In contrast, his questions to Trump were called softballs, most notably that he didn't challenge Trump on this.
I was totally against the war in Iraq.
That was exposed as a lie months ago. Reaction aimed at Lauer was scathing. The New York Times called the performance humiliating. Headlines screamed pathetic. Vox concluded Lauer totally blew it. Twitter responded with a hashtag, Lowering the bar. Clinton was asked about
Did you speak to him afterwards about that, and what was your impression of that event?
First of all, I think he did a good job, and I think you go into that in almost a no-win situation. You know that there's going to be at least 50% of the viewers are going to think you were unfair to their candidate and easy on the other. That's the nature of the beast. And so you go into it knowing that. And I think that there are such heightened emotions. I think this is probably the most emotional, visceral presidential election in a long, long time. In the last two election cycles, I think you could say I'm from Romney or I'm from Obama, but it did not incite such visceral reactions because there have never been two least liked candidates I don't remember. I mean, maybe Nixon, maybe, but vitriol on both sides is heretofore nothing I've ever seen.
Have you meaning the Today Show, struggled to cover the campaigns in a way that, has it been a struggle to cover these campaigns in a traditional manner?
I think, yes. I think because these are not traditional campaigns. You've got one campaign that's literally all over the map. I mean, it's just the rules are out the window and you don't know what's going to happen. Then you've got another campaign that is somewhat secretive and not exactly open and above board. So when I say open and above board, I mean, you know, not as transparent or not as welcoming as other campaigns have been in the past. So you've got, and the same could be said about the Republican campaign. They are both, everything's out the window. And so you're struggling to balance but to provide information.
So in a way, I mean, what we were talking about earlier, the fracturing of the medium, in a sense, like, I'm just thinking about this for the first time, but it seems like Trump has, I don't know if instinctively or consciously, understood that in a way that has upended the way he is covered.
He has cracked the code. It's this point in time, technologically, that allowed this to happen, that you can broadcast, quote, broadcast to millions of people without going through the broadcast networks.
Yeah.
And once that cat's out of the bag, it's out. And so, you know, because through the internet and through social media, you can get a message out that you want that is completely unfiltered. And I think he, better than anybody, has realized that. But by the same token, realized that the traditional media, in a sense, going after the story, for whatever the reasons are, whether it's ratings or information or whatever, are going to cover him. I mean, that, you know, everybody talked about his last press conference where he was ostensibly going to make this big announcement, and it was basically a 30-minute commercial for his hotel, mm-hmm. and then announced that President Obama was born in the U.S. So on the one hand, you're like, what? But on the other hand, you go, this guy's a genius.
Right. As we move forward, and I don't expect you to be an expert on this, but I'm sure you have an opinion about it. We talked about the Today Show being a family, and the way that this family, your family on the Today Show, kind of airs its grievances. I wonder if you've thought about that tone, that kind of civil tone that you guys have versus the national tone. And I guess I'm just wondering what your opinion is on where we are as a nation having a dialogue with itself.
I think that's why people are watching us, because I think for whatever amount of time they spend with us, there's a certain, I believe, calmness and reassuredness about what we do and how we present it. And that, okay, they are going to be buffeted and bombarded with all sorts of stuff the moment they walk out that door. But that for those few minutes that they choose to spend with us and their family, that, you know, it's a pretty safe haven, that they know that these are people that treat each other and them, our viewer, with respect. We don't talk down to you. We don't condescend. You know, we don't pretend to be, you know, these big J journalists up on the mountain and telling you this is what you need to know. We're trying to give you what you need to make your day. But do it in a way that is not, you know, you just get tired of the yelling, you know, in the media, you know, whether you go to these cable channels and it's like, oh, shut up. You know, why are you yelling? You know, would you tell your children, is this how you would behave in front of your children? Yeah. So
in the case of my wife and I, yes.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah, of course. and so that I think that's, you know, I don't think our job is to give people what they want, but to give them, you know, what you think they need. And I think this part of what folks need is a little bit of calm before their day gets going.
I have one last question for you there's the last thing I do, but it just occurred to me.
That sounds so final. This is the last thing I do.
It's the last thing I do. Well, it's a show tradition. It just occurred to me that I remember watching the Today Show on 9/11 with my son who'd just been born, and I remember seeing the second plane hit on the Today Show.
Matt just mentioned we have a breaking news story to tell you about. Apparently, a plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center here in New York City. It happened just a few moments ago, apparently. We have very little information available at this point in time. But on the phone, we do have Jennifer Oberstein, who apparently witnessed this event. Jennifer, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Katie.
Hi. Can you please tell me what you saw and give me any information about what's going on?
We just passed the 15th anniversary. I'm just wondering how you experienced that day and those following days.
I remember that day in as much as I remember saying on the air, what a beautifully perfect day, not a cloud in the sky. And then everything that happened after that was just so horrific. And just seemed to play out in slow motion. And I remember after the first plane hit, and I was standing in our newsroom, and somebody had said, oh, a small plane hit the tower. And we had the video, the live picture up, and I looked and I thought, it seemed like an awfully big hole.
That's right. It was the local news. I guess it wasn't the Today Show.
Yeah, well, to start,
right?
You know, because they covered over the Today Show. But I remember looking at that and thinking, that's a big hole for a small plane, you know. And then as it started to unfold, and then the second plane hit, and it was like, oh my God. And it was a horrific time. I mean, you know,
what is the newsroom like in a moment like that, as it's unfolding? I mean, you say it's in slow motion, but there's so many,
you know, the control
happening.
Room was pandemonium,
right?
But our newsroom, because everybody was running around, it was fairly empty because everybody was trying to figure out and find out and who can we get down there, and Ann Curry trying to get down to what now became Ground Zero and making phone calls. And now you're in this state of shock. At the same time, my dad was dying of lung cancer and ironically was supposed to come into the city that day, that afternoon, for consultation with his doctor to begin chemo. And needless to say, he didn't make it and was gone gone 2 months later. But it still seems surreal.
How soon was the Today Show back on the air? And how did you guys deal?
Well, we were still on for the rest of the country.
On the
we
air.
Stayed on the air. We were on the air till, I believe, 1 in the afternoon.
I see.
For the rest of the country. I think Washington, D.C. covered us, and I think maybe Philadelphia covered with their own local programming. But for the much of the rest of the country, we were on. And
so what is your role in that moment? I mean, clearly the weather becomes
relevant. I just was there. You know, and to be honest with you, I can't even tell you if I did anything on air for the rest of that morning. And to be honest, other than a few clips that we've run, I haven't watched it again. I can't.
All right. On that cheerful note, I'm going to conclude each this. I'm going to conclude this program, as I do each program, with something called the Amazing Five, Al Roker, where I will give five categories and ask for a recommendation in each of these categories.
All right. This is not to be confused with the Magnificent Seven.
No.
Although, which I do want to see.
I do too, and just had that conversation this morning.
Do also, want to see
I
that.
I also want to see Sully.
So, by the way, you want to talk, the movie Sully is spectacular.
One of the categories is film and or television. Mm-hmm. So do you want to use Sully as your Amazing Five recommendation in the category of film and television? You do not have to.
I don't think I will.
Okay. So I'll start with film and television.
Okay. I would rent on DVD or digital or streaming the Disney movie Zootopia.
Mm-hmm.
It is...
You're the second person in recent weeks who has mentioned Zootopia as being brilliant.
It is brilliant. It is prescient. It has it because, without giving away too much, in this current climate of us versus them, of exploiting fear for political gain, which is, doesn't sound like the stuff of a Disney movie, but is, and is brilliant.
Books.
I am currently reading and enthralled with Caleb Carr's Surrender New York. He wrote The Alienist. It is a terrific thriller.
It's fiction.
It's fiction.
Music.
Leon Bridges.
Yes.
Baby, 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 I'm coming home to your tender sweet loving. You're my one and only one.
A follow-up would be Nathaniel Ratliff.
They have a similar thing.
And The Night Sweats.
Now, does that sound, which is a kind of, it's not even kind of, I mean, it just is a throwback sound, both of those guys.
Yes.
Does that resonate with you from your earlier years?
Yeah, I guess so. But it just, it's very honest and it's pretty spare.
How would you describe it? It's like a 60s...
It's a 60s soul...
Stax
yeah,
sound?
Stax. A very... That's perfect. That's perfect.
Food.
I just ate at a terrific restaurant here in downtown called Le Cucu.
I like the name.
It is a French restaurant. It's in the at the hotel called 11 Howard down on Howard and Lafayette. And it's probably one of the best meals I've had in the last couple of years.
Wow. What did you get?
I had the lamb. My wife had the duck. It was for our 21st wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My second runner-up, or first runner-up, would be Franklin Barbecue in Austin, Texas.
Finally, miscellaneous, anything from your life, any gadget, thought, idea, anything that you would recommend to others. I find... As I say to every guest, that the first thing that pops into people's minds, they tend to dismiss immediately as being too dumb. And that is tends to be the best answer.
A Signo 207 medium point gel pen and the small moleskin diary.
Mm-hmm.
At night, I've started keeping a diary. And I just jot down some notes.
Is it the first time in your life you've done that?
Yeah.
And what precipitated that?
I just, you know what? I love the sound of a pen. I had been using a fountain pen, but I was just, I lost a couple of them. And I felt like I don't want to be that emotionally invested in a item that I'm probably going to lose.
That's how I was with my virginity.
There you go. There you go again. and fountain pen being an apt analogy.
Yes.
And I write one note a day and mail it to somebody, handwritten note.
That's interesting. So the note is just a reaching out to somebody that you haven't spoken to in a while.
Somebody I haven't spoken to, or just a thought about somebody. I might have talked. I've jotted one down to my brother the other day, who I'm very proud of. He has moved back to New York City. He is now. We grew up in Queens. He is now the CEO of Queens General Hospital.
Wow!
I'm very, very proud of him.
I'm sure you are. Well, Al Roker, I want to thank you so much for years and years of relatively accurate forecasting and entertainment. Al Roker, thank you for being here and thank you for being amazing.
Thank you, Michael.
How to Be Amazing is brought to you by PRX. Like How to Be Amazing on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at HTBA_show. And check out our website at howtobeamazingshow.com. If you like what you've heard, please write us a nice review on iTunes. Say how handsome I sound. How to Be Amazing is produced by Jennifer Brennan and Mary Shimkin. It's recorded at Argo Studio, New York City. Today's show is mixed and edited by Jason Saldanha with music composed by Chad Crouch. I am, as always, Michael Ian Black.